Frederick with Promise of Paradise, back to the land oral histories of Mendocino County. Today we'll be hearing from Norman Duvall of the town of Mendocino. Norman was a four-term Mendocino County supervisor during the building code wars of the 70s and 80s. It was a time when the county pushed to outlaw the very houses the back-to-the-landers called home. It was also a time when tensions were high, building inspectors might be armed, planning files went missing. The cabins that the counterculture community built were targeted and declared illegal. The message was clear. Hippies and beatniks weren't welcome. Norman Duvall and others were at the forefront of this battle. Norman's leadership helped forge a compromise with the county, and many hippie cabins were then brought up to code. The back-to-the-landers were here to stay. Norman Duvall, do you like to be called Norm or Norman?
Norman. Thank you.
When and where were you born?
Hollywood, California, 1940. I lost my mother at a real young age when I was 11, and everything fell apart soon after. So, and that was in Laguna Beach. So those events certainly formed, you know, the sense of security, stability, safety. All of that comes into the picture. Like on the Mendocino coast, you get to these geographic places and you're just stuck. You just don't want to move on. Well, that was that first relationship with the coast. I can remember during the war where we were in Laguna, just on the other side of the hill was the El Toro Marine Base. And there was practice bombing on Coronado Island. So, and we had blackout curtains and taped over headlights. It was a very, and everybody was doing something. Everybody was saving something for the war effort. So everybody's pitching in. The grease goes back to the meat counter. You have so many coupons to buy the basics. And when they're gone, that's gone. So those events formed me in many ways. So I was able to become more independent. And that gets us up to October of 62, when Khrushchev and Kennedy were right at loggerheads. The city went quiet. Nobody honked a horn. Everybody was polite to each other. The Bay Area had been ringed with Nike missiles. It was a hot spot. And if there were rockets out of Cuba, was Silicon Valley a target? Who knows? So I was meeting a number of people, usually every night, at a family-style restaurant, appropriately named Red's. So we were all sitting at this table having another plate of spaghetti, softly talking about what was going on. One said, war is crazy. Another one person said, well, only city people create war. Somebody else mentioned, well, let's go to the country. Where? And somebody said, Casper. And I had no idea where Casper was. No idea at all. And Norman, you have the truck, so you get the piano. We left at 5 o'clock the next morning. We finished a film with Bruce Bailey on the streets of Mendocino back in 1962. It was a remarkable weekend, and Mendocino had that allure and that draw as much as Laguna Beach. So I felt home again.
Norman, this cast of characters you described and the piano in the back of the truck and driving up at 5 a.m., how would you describe the group? Like, what kind of friends were these? Beatniks? Were they artists? Who did you hang with?
I would call them beatniks. What's the difference between a beatnik and a hippie? Well, I think as opponents to war, both of them are very much connected and the same. Beatniks arrived here with books and tools and fully expected to be here. In 62, 63, 64, we would gather together and sit around and talk out the books that we're reading, helping somebody build a shed or a small barn or a pump house, and spent most of my time involved in trying to protect the town. So sorry to hear people wanting to call it a village. You know, that connotes to me that they just want to turn it into a shopping center.
When you were here in 1963 after the Cuban Missile Crisis and you arrive, Casper, you'd never heard of this town, but it reminded you a little bit of the coastline of Laguna Beach. Can you kind of paint a picture of the different kinds of groups of people? How did it feel and look to you?
We were outcasts. We were aliens. That population in the early 60s, we stood out like sore thumbs. And as time went by, there was real pushback. To be welcomed by Stuart Tregoning, Don Guthrie at Baxman's, Harold Brayton. Without Harold, a lot of us would have been colder, wetter, more hungry. As it was back in the 60s, you didn't get food stamps, you got commodity foods. Mm-hmm. stand in line at the Army Reserve, get another can of peanut butter. But there was work, really, for anybody that wanted to work hard. We collected timber and sold it. We brought up seconds from AgriLite Bronson. They make tempered glass shower doors. They were selling for $5 a piece or next to nothing. But that's why you see so many of these tempered glass windows from that era of construction. And then I started a little company to dig water wells. I got a contract to tear down the Holmes Lumber Mill in Eureka. So there was opportunity everywhere. So if you wanted a job at $3.50 an hour, gas was 35 cents a gallon. You could buy an acre of land east of Casper for $1,000. You could rent a house from the Casper Lumber Company for $50 a month, or you could go up to the Union Landing Hotel and have a room for $75 a year. So the opportunity was, and there were far more empty sheds, loose lumber laying around than there is now. You turn and look everywhere here, there was an opportunity. Later in 1963, I was able to buy a house west of Highway 1 above Fort Bragg for $5,000. Small house, but it had hot and cold running water. Much better than the tool shed I'd been in. I went to the Casper Bargain Center and outfitted the kitchen, most of what I still have, for $5.
When you were young and starting out in the mid-60s, what did you care about? What did you want to change, or the group of people you were with?
Well, the first thing we got onto was PG&E, and here we are again. They wanted to get approval for a nuclear power plant on the north end of Point Arena.
What year was this?
1960, 62. They had already begun one in Bodega Bay. There's the pit for the reactor. A number of us got here in our 20s or later 20s. And because of the PG&E issue, just the extensive logging that was taking place, we were pulled into civic awareness very, very quickly. And we also had a number of us had been protesters against the war, which was still very active. We got on planning committees and began to make statement.
During the time of the building code wars, let's go back there for the moment. Why was there a crackdown on the so-called illegal dwellings? What happened?
Oh, Mendocino County got a building code. I don't think they had had one before. And I was one of the first people to get red tag. I had no idea you needed a permit, but I did. And they won that one. But some years later, I was building an inspected, civil engineered house for my uncle, Bill Ames. And I had to make steps to went up to a little landing that went up to a little deck and went down to another deck on another angle. And the building inspector came and measured the stair height, found a quarter-inch difference. Some months before, in Sonoma County, there was the beginning of a building code war and a health issue, and the county of Sonoma ran a bulldozer through Morningstar, which was a commune. So there were a lot of hot tempers about people that were coming into the region. So the building inspector, finding this error in my stairs, he said, "You'll have to take them out." And I looked at him, and he turned on me, and he said, "We got rid of people like you in Sonoma County, and we'll get rid of people like you here." When the building code wars really heated up, I called it Mendocino County's white-black issue. We don't have blacks to kick around, so let's go get some leftover beatniks and some new hippies. And MCPOA was the first organization to push back, citizens who got together and began an offense. MCPOA, Mendocino County Property Owners Association. Well, the board took some interest in this and established LULU, the Land Use Law Enforcement Unit, and then had an assistant attorney in the county council's office just for codes. Well, things heated up all the more, and it wasn't just building codes. It was also the desire to live together and the desire to have more than one house on a parcel.
And there's a situation that came out of Santa Barbara where there were multiple people not sharing the same last name.
Yes, you're speaking of the city of Santa Barbara versus Mary Adamson. Up to the time of Mary Adamson's final decision in the lawsuit, a number of counties and cities had established the rule of five, which meant to them that no more than five surnamed people can be in the same house. And they that was interpreted to say that the house is now an apartment house. This is not a family, single family residence. What is a family? Rose Byrd, appointed by the governor, made the final decision. She was Chief Justice at the time. The rule of five was thrown out. So the idea of having a group of people living at one address, all of a sudden, that's a world changer. And Rose Byrd basically defined the word family. In her opinion written for the court, she said that, let me get this right, a family, you're a family if you eat dinner together. There you go.
You're listening to our interview with Norman Duvall, a land use planner and former county supervisor. I'm Laura Hamburg, and this is KZYX, Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County.
Alton Graham, if he's not the mayor of Albion, but he's certainly Albion's jester. There was a time when Roland Feldman, the chief building inspector, wanted to get to be armed, to be a building inspector.
Armed with a gun?
Yes. And it was pretty obvious that the county wanted these owner-builders out of here and be gone. So Alton Graham, this is what is said to me to be true. Alton Graham goes up to the counter that used to be in the old courthouse, which is now the town hall in Fort Bragg. Jim Fite was the building inspector. And Alton walks up to the counter, puts a 45 automatic down on the counter, pointing towards him, and tells Jim Fite to pick it up and use it because I have one too. There was such hostility between the governed and the governance. So Alton has one as well. And he says, I'm going to count to three. And Jim Fite is just absolutely terrified. Alton Graham continues to count. One, two, three, squirt. Water pistol.
This is Captain Fathom.
Yeah. So, this guy thought he had seen the end. He left the county employ immediately.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And I was talking to a building inspector who works in Mill Valley, what he thought about being armed. And he says, you got to understand, building inspectors are very disliked. And some people get really nasty.
Well, let's talk about, for example, Roland Feldman.
Well, he certainly had peculiar ways about him. And he put a one-way mirror into the old planning building office, what used to be on the corner of Bush and Logap. He put a one-way mirror there so he could look at the people coming to the counter.
What era is this?
He was the building inspector of 81, 82. But the strangest thing that he did before he disappeared was that all of the records in the Mendocino Coast Planning Department Coast Office in Fort Bragg up to 1973 disappeared. So the county has no choice but to, if you can prove that it existed, it's pre-existing. So that changes the setback requirement. It changes what I've been doing, consulting, helping people figure some of this stuff out. And if you can go back in time to show, even on the assessor's cards for each property, that existed, you have a chance of being able to get it legalized by the county.
Currently?
Yes. I speak plannerese. The county trained me well to do land use planning consulting.
Mm-hmm. So it's a tense time. Inspectors feeling like they might even want to be armed. The people that are the settlers in the hills that have built these dwellings feel under attack, almost a determined effort to sort of shoo them out. So now what needs to happen?
Why would we put so much time into planning? Well, remember, in 1978, Warner Chabot, a part-time carpenter here in the town of Mendocino, representing himself and the public, sued the county over its general plan. No Mendocino Superior Court judge would hear the case. Judge John Golden was dispatched by judicial counsel to come to and sit in Mendocino and hear this case. And John Drummond, county counsel, representing the county for the planning issues, was asked to bring the county's general plan into the court. Well, on the day that this was to be shown to the court, it was one dolly after another of cardboard boxes. You couldn't find anything anywhere. So Judge Golden listened to the county, awarded Warner, the carpenter, attorney's fees for having done an excellent job. And Golden then, till the new general plan was approved by the court, the Office of Planning and Research, and the public and the Board of Supervisors, that no application or approval of variances, two-for-one splits, major subdivisions, use permits. He locked down the county.
So it was a blanket moratorium.
For 3 years.
What did that mean, grinding to a halt?
There weren't going to be any subdivisions on any land in the county, except the cities. The new general plan had to be drafted, and then after that, the new local coastal program had to be completed as an amendment to the general plan. And then, if that's not enough, you've got the town of Mendocino plan, which is a totally unique animal that is drawing people from everywhere and pushing people who live here further and further into the outback, wherever they might go.
This is Laura Hamburg with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land Oral Histories of Mendocino County. You're hearing from Norman Duvall, a four-term county supervisor, who was a pivotal figure in the building code wars that swept the county in the 70s and 80s. During the time of the building code wars, let's go back there for the moment. What was a Class K home, and then take us from Class K to clean slate?
Many people saw a number of things happening. The Board of Supervisors in the mid-70s had appointed the BLUR, Building Code and Law Unit. So there was BLUR 1 and then later BLUR 2. The board had more or less sent Cimolino back to the coast to figure it out. And people wanted to use salvaged lumber, not necessarily have it grade stamped. But that was a big change. People felt that if we want to live in a house with fewer regulations, that's our right. So even with clean slate, well, when changes came, they had to meet the electrical, the plumbing, the septic, the mechanical, the stoves. But if you wanted to have 20-inch on centers, you were able to do that. So that's the Class K. Every county could impose the right to build such if with the majority vote. We had to do this by ordinance. So John Drummond, the county council, came back with some very illustrative comment that it's much safer for people to live in houses than not have houses. So it passed, and it's come under some scrutiny. The county wants to see more inspections, plural, which will drive up prices even further.
Is the ordinance, the Class K ordinance, is still in effect in the county today?
Yes, and I've tried time after time to get clean slate back. What's clean slate? Just a couple of months into my first term, numbers were sitting around on the grass at the Beaujolais, and trying to say, how can we do it? We said, we're just going to do it. Let's change the county. Half the records are missing in the coast. What was there, what isn't? It's in the county planning department has virtually no relationship with the assessor's office. And the idea was to make sense out of what had happened and figure out what you could do about it. Clean slate, it addressed the planning issues. It addressed the building code issues. It addressed the Department of Transportation, CDF, and they exist. So now what are we going to do? Well, for a while with BLUR 1 and 2, if you stress tested the house, if you could collapse it, it obviously couldn't be passed, could it? Good thinking by the county.
Wasn't there a story of somebody who had a stress test on their yurt or their dome?
Yeah, that was Nat Bingham. So he started at the bottom and he just built an outer shell of this thing. It went a long way. If you couldn't collapse this dome, it was very convincing. There was a lot of sandbags there.
I'm still not sure I understand clean slate.
If you made a commune, mm-hmm. and you built five different houses, and you've got one septic tank and it's sized for 800 gallon, well, clean slate would get into the process. EnviroHealth would come out and say, no, if you're going to have five cabins, you need this size of system. So you got to get that done. Each of the cabins would be brought up to electrical standards, mechanical standards for the stoves. But if you only in forest land, you're only allowed one house and a second sub-house with a use permit. Well, none of that had happened. There are people living everywhere. The counties thought, well, let's at least get it legal. Let's get it safe as best as we can and leave them alone. It only lasted for 18 months.
If I describe this, and tell me where I get it wrong, we have no building code that we're aware of in Mendocino County. Then we have the theft of at least the coast files. Yeah. Then we have this influx of people who have built all over in the land, salvaging, tearing down the old hotels and the bridges and making their marvelous little cabins. There's this sort of culture war against these people out in the hills. Planning department cracks down, develops an ordinance called Class K, and then, am I getting this right at all?
No, partially.
Okay.
You're right up to that point.
Help me.
What really happened was that it came out of Jerry Brown's office. It was attached to some bill here or there, and it slipped right in. So we got Class K at about the same time as Clean Slate, at about the same time as Mary Adamson, Santa Barbara. And so there was a real change happening. The rule of five was gone. Grade stamp lumber was gone. 18-inch on centers was gone. The neighbors certainly were happy to clean up some of the septic issues. There was a period of enlightenment. There was a renaissance.
Can you give some examples, Norman, of the renaissance, of that feeling?
It's interesting. I've thought you could have an endless number of lyceums of discussion. As I know the county, a number of people just want to have a meaningful conversation. I hope that is true throughout the county. But we've got to get back in conversation again. We've got to get the under 40 crowd to want to join us.
How do you think that moment in time, Class K, helped shape the Back to the Land movement?
It gave a meaningful reality of security, stability, join the neighborhood. You're going to be here for a while. A concern I would have for the younger people I see in the community today is that housing is so difficult that they're constantly on the move. You don't last long enough in one address to register to vote. And I see this as the nation's number one issue, domestic issue. And Mendocino County is a micro dish, petri dish, if you want to see the future in the country. So it's a microcosm that you can take a look at our issues and you will find them nationwide. We have only so much land left that has both water and sewer. And wherever that can be done, we should be maximizing density. And everybody has to move over.
When you look back, Norman, look at the heyday of the building code wars and the installation of Class K, why do you think, or do you think it's important to study that and look at that history?
No, let's not look backwards to be our futures. You want some new ideas? Go to Berkeley. They have a concept of housing there that goes from childbirth to the basement for the mortician. The Germans designed such structures before World War II. We need new concepts that allow more density. So in the general plan area, you're allowed a second unit. Building costs today, well, I've ventured just a few months ago, $200, $250. Now it's 250 to 3, and then the last week or two, closer to the city, it's going to go north of 300 a foot. So how well have we done the best for sustainability by taking that square footage of land, putting this cute house on it that works for one person?
I see that you're a real forward-looking person. I see that you're always interested in addressing the problems right now of today.
We've got to. What else can we be doing? How can we make things better? In so many different ways, we're looking at having a mindset reset. We have to really think of better ways for more sustainability. Say something and do something. It has to, and we want the support of people under 40 plus minus, then it's got to be their issues, not those of older people. We've had our share. It's time to be thankful for achievements, live with the balance, and really get in some new thinking.
Yeah.
So I think one of the reasons that we see such a hanging on to old traditional ways with mid-1950s concepts is that there aren't any really comprehensive alternatives. Yes, there's solar and electric vehicles, but I've yet to see a logging truck with a battery. Be able to look at some of these concepts. Now, last month, 58,000 migrants came to the southern border. Why is that happening? It's not just simply because their job died. No, there's no water. The Panama Canal has had to restrict the depth of ships going through the canal, the new version of it, because there's not enough fresh water in Gatun Lake to float the ships up and down. It's not raining enough. So now they're pumping some of this brackish water further down, back up to Gatun Lake to try to float ships across it. When we passed NAFTA, we put 7 million maize farmers in Mexico out of work. Cargill flooded Mexico with corn from us. And those maize farmers, corn farmers in Mexico, didn't have any other choice. The government, it's not, they just don't see, they have created a Central America that they treat like a candy box or a toolbox.
Now, you're speaking like a radical who's saying if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention.
We've got that, what's her name in, yes, Alexandria. And we've got Greta in Sweden. A few more well-spoken, well-read young people can make the change we desperately need.
So I know we've covered a lot of subjects, but I just want to make sure, is there anything that I didn't ask you about that you think is important to share?
How much my earlier life affected my later life. Most of my background before getting involved with the building inspector and then running for office was on working on the waterfront. I was 22, 23. After I had come up here, I was back down there. And like many people, here, there, I got a job to manage gangs of longshoremen all over the Bay Area. It was just a remarkable experience to be able to, you get out of your car to go to work, and all of a sudden you're standing next to the bow of a ship. And you say, this is pretty impressive. Managing gangs of longshoremen at night on the Oakland estuary is a balancing act. And there's 20 of them, and there's one of me. It was the best training possible to become a supervisor. Fewer people in the gang, they're not as scary.
You just heard Norman Duvall talk about how his background helped form him as a formidable leader in the Back to the Land Building Code Wars. What you just heard is only a slice of what Norman Duvall has to say. In our longer interview posted on the KZYX website, Norman talks about some of the current problems facing the county, from cannabis to the coastal plan, and the need to engage the under 40 residents of the county. To listen, search the KZYX website and look for the Promise of Paradise program. You'll find Norman Duvall's half-hour interview posted, and a lightly edited version of our hour-long talk, along with photos. You can also find archives of all the Promise of Paradise interviews and catch short excerpts of the Promise of Paradise interviews during the NewsHour on Thursdays, and half-hour episodes air at 3:30 on Thursday afternoons. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, Story Center, the Mendocino Institute, and Grace Hudson Museum.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear.